Thanks for listening to Tuned to Yesterday's Encore broadcasts. Do you enjoy the historical aspect of these old shows? Would you like to hear more in-depth tales of the performers and players that made the golden age of radio what it was? We have a weekly podcast dedicated to this called the Tuned to Yesterday Dialer, or TTY Dialer for short. It brings you stories of how radio was, along with fun with sound from radio's past, and a brief preview of the shows coming up for the week. The podcasts are about 20 minutes long, and they're posted Saturday nights and make for great listening on Sundays or whenever you want. It's the TTY Dialer podcast at WRVO.org, or listen as part of your subscription to Tuned to Yesterday on iTunes. Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, with shows from radio's golden era broadcast in your theater of the mind. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, mystery from two detective programs. Later in the hour, radio star Jeff Chandler is Michael Shane from the 1940s. Right now, it's Richard Diamond, private detective. The Singing Sleuth, portrayed by Dick Powell, in the September 24th, 1949 broadcast on NBC.
Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, this business I'm in can get pretty silly sometimes. I can go along for a whole month and get by on nothing but meals at the automat and a dozen laughs a day. The funny ones usually pay just as well as the tough ones, but eventually somebody starts something that's about as funny as an open grave. So then I put on a long face and start carrying my .38. I don't worry about those times because I don't think about them. I just know they'll be around, and I know I won't have to bother about it unless I get my $100 a day in expenses. That's the equalizer. As long as I get that ever-loving loot in my little hot hand, Lucifer can walk in with a machine gun and I'll arm wrestle him for the price of a hot dog. Last week, I stopped in the middle of a real yacker and realized that I'd been giggling overtime. That's right. The cycle had caught up with me, and the label on my future had changed from fun time to trouble, and no guarantee as to the date of expiration. What started all this? Well, one morning on 53rd Street, a couple of guys were just pulling up in front of a garage.
This the garage?
Yeah. Go on, drive in.
Here comes a guy.
Yeah, this is big luck for us. The guy coming is the guy I want. I don't want he should see me yet, so you keep talking to him and I'll get out this side. Tell him to look at the motor or something.
There's something I can do for you, mister?
Yeah, take a look at the motor. It's been missing.
Sounds all right.
It don't drive like it sounds, so take a look at it.
Okay, sure. Race it once.
Huh?
I said race it once.
He don't hear so well.
Huh?
Hello, Billy boy.
Where did you come from? How did you get here?
One at a time, Billy. I came in the car, got out the other side. You're looking good, Billy, real good.
What do you want? How did you find me?
Can't you ask just one simple question? You get so all mixed up, Billy.
Look, leave me alone, please.
Sure, Billy, I'll leave you alone. All alone, you louse.
Diamond Detective Agency, our 30-day test revealed that not one single case of throat irritation was due to strangling.
Oh, Rick, you're awful.
Oh, how can you say that? I'm lovely, I'm engaged, now you steal wool.
Oh, you idiot.
Ah, you peaked. Hello, honey.
Hi. Am I going to see you tonight?
Sure, what'll we do?
You get here about 8, I'll think of something.
Oh, let's stay in. I've got that awful broke feeling again.
Oh, is business bad, Rick?
Well, it's pretty bad. But it gives me a chance to get some exercise.
Exercise?
Yeah, I found a Japanese beetle in the desk the other day. Been giving me judo lessons.
I'll just pretend I didn't hear that.
Don't knock it. Vaudeville's on the way back.
Leave it alone. Let it live.
Helen.
I'll see you about 8.
Wait a minute, honey. I think I forgot to shut something off. People are running in.
Clients?
I'll find out. Oh, would one of you gentlemen mind dropping a few $100 bills on the floor?
Well?
I'll call you right back. I don't think they're spendthrifts.
All right, Rick. Bye.
Bye, honey. Well, now, lads, what can I do for you?
Your name, Diamond?
Yeah? Would you mind closing the door? I've got a beetle that'll break my arm if he catches cold.
Hey, this guy's screwy, boss.
Shut the door like he says. You got a beetle, huh, funny man?
Yeah, and I'll bet you 8 to 5 he can throw you.
Well, if you have got a beetle, he must be running around your head, but I ain't got time to find out.
You know something? I don't think we're going to get along.
You may be right, funny man. It depends.
On what?
On whether or not you turn the bundle over to me.
Look, Rockerhead, if you're looking for your laundry, you got the wrong bin.
I don't like the way this guy talks.
No, but first we ask him nice. We want the bundle, funny man.
You just said that.
I say it again for you. Then if you don't get it, I make you understand.
Like how? You couldn't point out Clyde Beard in a lion cage.
Here it is. Now try hard. I want the bundle.
I know this will throw you, but what bundle?
He's going to be difficult, boss.
Shut up. Look, Shamus. Some of my friends think I'm kind of good-natured, but sometimes I fool them and get nasty.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
You want to know what bundle? I tell you. Maybe you snap out of it. The bundle the dame gave you, the $200,000.
$200,000 what? Girdles?
That does it. Vern, see why the Shamus is lying.
Now, wait a minute, Buster. You go on the muscle with me, and I'll tear off your biceps and stuff them in your fat face.
Vern.
Yeah?
Oh, nuts. Why is it a 38 always changes my mind, and I wanted to be so virile?
I'm going to use this gun unless you tell us where you got the $200,000.
Now, this is getting silly.
No, it ain't. Well, it's getting bloody, see?
Hey, now, what's going on?
I told you, funny man. I want what you got.
Well, what I got hurts, and you're welcome to it.
You sure asked for it.
Oh!
Come on. You save your head from getting squashed, and me and Vern save a lot of time. Where you got the dough?
Look, I didn't know what you were talking about when you started, and I'm just as stupid now.
You are that, funny man. Vern...
Hey, wait! Now,
A gun barrel can cut you up pretty bad. You want to see how bad, or do you want to tell us?
You think I like the massage? I tell you, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't like to be kept waiting, you. I don't like it none, see? Now you spill your gut, so my boy chops you up like hamburger. Open your yap and sing. Sing, you hear me?
Okay, but you won't like it. I can't begin to tell you.
Close his lousy mouth. Close it good.
Oh, I knew you wouldn't like it.
Now, funny man, you got a wisecrack? You gonna still make like a hero? Answer me, funny man, or I step on your face.
Boss.
Shut up.
But, boss.
Yeah, what do you want?
He don't hear you. He's out.
Huh? Oh. Well, what did you sap him so hard for, stupid? Maybe you turned him off for good.
Nah. He'll be around in a couple of minutes. Then I can work on his ribs. He'll tell us where he's got the dough.
I don't know.
You don't know what? He's got the dough, you sure know that?
Yeah, the dame says she'd give it to him.
You think maybe she crossed you? You think she skipped?
I think maybe we better find out. This Shamus is pretty stubborn or pretty clean. I think we find out.
How?
You watch. I'll search the joint, then we'll get out of here.
What about the Shamus?
He'll make it all right. I want him around for a while. After we find the dough, you can put him back to sleep.
Mr. Diamond. Mr. Diamond. Mr. Diamond, wake up.
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. I'm not coming in.
Mr. Diamond, wake up.
Mm-hmm. Oh. What a nice sweater.
How do you feel?
Well, a quick comparison might be a garter snake and a log jam.
Well, you don't look very comfortable. Why don't you sit up?
Afraid my eyes might fall out. Oh.
Better?
Yeah. Know any shaggy dog stories? I could use a laugh.
How did you get like this?
It wasn't easy. How long have I been here?
I just came in. I was going to call the police when you started mumbling.
Mumbling?
Yes, you said something like, oh, it's not so late, honey. And can I come in for a drink? You must have been dreaming.
I'm glad I woke up. She probably didn't have a drink in the house anyway. Pardon me, honey, but I got to run some water over my bumps.
You don't look so bad, considering.
Well, considering what? The people get run over by
frocks every day?
When you start feeling better, I'd like to talk business.
Well, with business, I straighten right up. What's on your mind? Oh, that sweater.
I want you to guard something for me.
Why? You're the type that goes bear hunting with a switch.
Is that supposed to be nasty?
Well, take a guess. I just get mauled up by two gorillas, and before they get nasty, they mention some dame and some money, and you know anything about it?
Why should I?
Well, I wake up, and there you are. I thought maybe you stopped by to see if the boys get a gold star for the work.
I don't know anything about it. Now, do you mind if I sit down?
No, no. I'm sorry. I haven't got anything more comfortable. The termites just walked out of my couch. What do you want guided, lover?
I can't tell you what it is, but it's in a locker at the 42nd Street subway. I want you to pick it up and keep it with you until I call for it.
I get $100 a day in expenses, and I don't know what I'm doing. The fee looks like a skyrocket.
Here's $500.
Mm-hmm.
When I pick up the item, you get $500 more.
Ooh.
And I'll be back in 2 days.
Well, I was going to start looking for the guys who gave me this headache, but $1,000 makes me impatient. You got the key to the locket?
Yeah, right here. By the way, do you work nights, Mr. Diamond?
Well, not in the office. Don't you think I ought to know your name?
You get the item, and I'll introduce myself in 2 days. And I do keep a drink in the house, Mr. Diamond.
She got up then and walked out of the room like Eve with half an apple. I put some iodine on my face and headed for the 42nd Street subway. All the way down, I kept thinking about those two mugs who had worked me over, and for the life of me, I couldn't guess why. I didn't know it then, but if I could have guessed, it probably would be for the life of me. I reached the subway and went down. I found the locker, opened it, reached in, and pulled out a small black leather bag with a lock on it. Out of curiosity, I tested the weight and finally decided I must be guarding a sack full of spider webs. I tucked it under my arm and turned to go. But sometimes things don't always work out the way you plan them.
Okay, Shamus, let's have the bag.
Oh, when am I ever going to make Eagle Scout? I should have smelled something. Hello, Vern.
I'm in a hurry. If your wise crack, you get dead. Give me the bag.
Where's your friend? Out collecting heads?
I guess I got to kill you.
I guess again. Here's the bag.
Okay. I should make a hole in you just because you ain't honest. You had the dough all the time.
You mean in that bag?
Oh, now don't tell me it ain't in it.
Well, if it is, Buster, it's all in one bill. Feel the weight.
Hey, it is too light. Why, you lousy, no-good gumshoe. This time I don't play around. Frank wants that dough, and you're going to show me where it is.
Oh, I wish you'd get yourself a .22. Those big guns make dents in my back.
I'm going to count three, and you're going to tell me where the dough is, or I'll kill you all over the place.
You couldn't make it 100, could you? It's so much fun when you're past 50.
Be funny. You're only killing one guy. One.
This never happened when I went on next to closing.
Two.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Look.
You look. It's your last chance.
Drop it, Vern. You're boxed up. Hey, who's that?
The Marines.
Why, you dirty...
Rick, are you all right?
Oh, Walt, I know you're bashful about these things, but you're going to be kissed.
Oh, now stop that. Otis, have your boys keep the crowd back.
All right. Keep back. Come on.
What about the gunner? You shot him good, Lieutenant.
Well, I'm glad you noticed, you mallet head. Now, what about him?
He's dead.
How did you find that out? 20 questions?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess we saved your life this time.
Well, I hope I can do the same for you sometime, Sergeant, but science will hate me.
Now, don't you start blubbering again, Otis. I couldn't stand it. Go get the wagon like a good boy.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Now, what's this all about, Rick?
Believe me, Walt, I don't know. How did you get here?
We got a call from a dame about 10 minutes ago. Said you were coming down here and some guy was going to kill you.
Well.
Now, don't you well me. I want to know what this is all about.
Well, let's go down to headquarters and I'll tell you just what I know. Well, are you coming?
You mean you're going to cooperate?
Well, certainly.
Oh, Otis.
What's the matter, Walt?
I feel a little faint. Would you mind helping me up the stairs? I think I've been working too hard.
Walt and I left the subway and headed for the 5th Precinct Police Station. On the way over, I told him about the girl and about the two hoods who had worked me over in my office. When we reached the station, he shoved the rogues gallery at me, and I started going through the miles of photographs.
Well, the guy we shot in the subway was one Vern Gironda, small-time torpedo, but we can't find out anything else. Can't you find the other one in any of those pictures?
Well, I've looked through them all. All I know is his name is Frank. Maybe he hasn't got a record.
Here, try this stack. Dates back to the year one.
Well, you can bet on one thing, Walt. The girl who called you was the girl who was in my office.
She was the only one who knew I was going down to the locker in the subway.
But how did she know this Vern Gironda was going after you?
Well, she must have known he was going to tail me and that he was after something. Something that could have been in that black bag. It was a plant, because she knew it was empty. I think she'd planned that when this Vern caught me with an empty bag, he'd get rough enough to shoot, and if you were there, you'd have to stop him.
You mean she wanted him dead?
Well, that's my guess. Dead or in jail, but out of the way.
That $200,000's probably behind it.
Walt?
Did you find something?
Yeah. This is the other guy who came into the office.
Yeah? Let's see. Hey, what do you think you're doing?
What's the matter with you? This is the man.
You're crazy. Now, you listen to me. If you're trying to start one of those routines
again...
Oh,
now, wait a minute. You asked me to pick out the hood that was in my office, and this is the boy. A little younger, maybe, but you know darn well I wouldn't make a mistake on identification.
This is screwy. This is ridiculous. Where's my bicarbonate?
Oh, what is wrong with you?
Rick, that's Frank Purcell, and he's been dead for 2 years.
What? Oh, wasn't he the guy who went over a 50-foot cliff with his whole gang?
That's right. The car burned. The only guy they didn't find in the wreck was Billy Crump. He disappeared completely.
Well, this one got out of it, too, and stayed around long enough to pay me a visit this morning. And his first name was Frank.
Oh, that's impossible. The boys chased them right after the holdup and shot out one of their tires. Watched the car go over and saw it turn.
Didn't they knock over the payroll at the Martin Shipyard?
Sure, got away with
$200,000.
Lieutenant.
Huh? Oh, yeah. What is it?
I'm not killing down at the garage. That dead guy was just identified as being wanted for armed robbery.
Killing?
Yeah, pretty bad. Somebody shot up a guy that worked in the place. Well, who was it?
Her name was Crump.
What?
Yeah, Billy Crump. Stuck up some shipyard about 2 years back.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, I was only telling you.
Okay, okay. What else on him?
He has a wife, lives at 64th Street, apartment 205. That's all.
Well, don't just stand there, you applehead. Go get the car.
Oh, yeah, Lieutenant.
Come on, Rick.
I'm waiting.
All right. I apologize.
Oh, you really don't have to, Walt. I was as confused as you were.
Was? But you're not now?
No, I don't think so, Walt. But let's get over to see Mrs. Crump. She can do a lot of straightening out.
I hope Mrs. Crump is in.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Lieutenant. She calls herself Stewart, Mrs. Edna Stewart.
What?
Yeah. Her husband used her alias instead of Crump.
Oh, well, that's all right, Sergeant. Maybe when you start pounding a beat again, you'll think of those little things.
205, wasn't it, Walt?
How about it, Sergeant? It was 205, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, Lieutenant. 205, that was it. I remember. I might make a few months.
Shut up.
Walt, hold it down.
I'm sorry. Otis.
Yeah, Lieutenant?
Shut up.
Here it is, Walt. I'll give it a knock.
Go ahead.
Looks like no score.
Try the door.
Why, Walt, without a warrant?
Now, don't you start that again. If Frank Purcell is still alive, we're going to grab that 200 grand. We've got to work fast. Besides, I'm not trying the door. You are.
Well, it's open, unstained, and honest. I suppose you'd like me to trip you just so you can say you fell in by mistake?
Oh, come on. Pick up your big feet, Otis.
That would be hard, even for Samson.
Oh, yeah. Now, you listen to me, wise guy. I'm getting sick and tired of... Ooh. Holy cow, Lieutenant. It's a body.
Rick, how about it?
Quite.
Mrs. Crump.
Mrs. Crump, Mrs. Stewart, the girl in my office this morning, no difference.
I figured she might be the one in your office when I heard Crump had a wife. He must have had the 200 grand, and Purcell killed her for it.
Well, you can bet the cash wasn't in the apartment because she was too smart to keep it here.
Well, there's no signs of a struggle. From the way she's lying, she was probably sitting at this desk.
Writing pad on the desk, Lieutenant.
Keep your paws off of it.
Well, she was writing something. Went through to the bottom sheet. Yeah, numbers.
Otis, start casing the place and have a conscience when you pass the icebox.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Too many numbers for a phone. Walt, what are we looking for?
Purcell and the 200,000.
Okay. Now, we don't know where Purcell is, but that 200,000 had to cool off until Crump could spend it.
So?
Now, where would be the safest place to keep that much cash?
The numbers. Safety deposit box.
You have just won yourself, Sergeant Otis.
I should cut my throat first.
Now, it's a cinch Purcell has gone down to the safety deposit box.
Hey, I found a couple of plane tickets, Lieutenant, and it looked like they'd started to pack.
Yeah, let me see them. Two for Mexico City and good for the first. That ties it.
Would you mind whispering in my ear, or am I asking too much?
Walt, when Mrs. Kopp came to my office, she made it very clear she'd be back in 2 days. That's the first of the month. I don't know how long she'd been there before I woke up, but she was interested in my office, and she was coming back in 2 days. Now, if she wanted to hide something, the best place would be somewhere that had already been searched. Otis, you think you could dig up a safety deposit box under the name of Crump or Stewart? Here's the number.
I can try.
Stout fellow. Now, Walt, if Frank Purcell did kill the girl and then headed for the deposit box, I don't think he found much. And the only other person that Mrs. Crump contacted and that he suspects is yours truly.
Uh-huh. And he'll tail you, or worse.
I hope so. But I want 10 minutes alone in my office before he catches up. Now, what is get going and call me at my place?
Right.
Now, Walt, I'm going to walk around for about half an hour and see if I can pick up a tail. Then I'll lead him to my office. I'll get there at exactly 2:30. You get there 10 minutes later. I think I'm going to need help.
I still wish I knew what you were up to.
Now, as soon as Otis finds that deposit box and tells me if Mrs. Crump is at the bank around 11 this morning, I'll tell you the whole thing. And if I'm lucky enough to stay alive, you'll have Frank Purcell to fill in the details. I left Walt and started walking. If Purcell was after me, he was too smart to let me spot him, so I just kept going until I'd used up the half hour, and I was on my way up to my office. Purcell wouldn't follow right away, so that gave me the 10 minutes I wanted. I went in and looked around. Nothing had changed. Desk, chair behind, and chair in front. Small closet with sink, hat rack, and bookcase. I went to work on the bookcase first. Nothing. So I took the desk apart. I kept going, closet, under the rugs, still nothing. I took a breather and tried to reason it out. If I had suspected something in the beginning, where would be the last place I'd look? Something I never used. I didn't have a vacuum cleaner, so that was out. Then I remembered something. Something the girl had said that morning. Do you work nights, Mr. Diamond? I looked up at the big light bulb hanging from the ceiling. A little lost weekend, but it was worth a try. I walked over and snapped on the light switch. Ah, score for Diamond. With the light on, the bulb became transparent, and lying at the bottom, I could see the outline of a large bundle. I forgot to smile because the footsteps coming up at the hall sounded like company. I turned off the light, went over to my desk and sat down with a very comfortable .38 between my legs. Well, good afternoon, rocker boy. Did you forget your bucket of blood?
I forgot something, sure, funny man. I forgot to leave you dead.
You don't look so unhappy. You tried.
I've been getting a big run around all day. So I brought me something to slow things down. You want to see it, or do I keep it in my pocket?
Well, if it's a mouse, I'll scream.
In this pocket, I got 6 ways to kill a louse. If you ain't seen a louse, just grab a mirror.
Oh, by George, by George. That was a good one. What's the matter? Was the deposit box empty?
Oh, you know about that, do you? I figured you was working with a dame. Well, you got a silent partner now.
You're right. Last time I saw her, she was speechless.
I'm going to do the same for you, funny man, but I make a deal. You say no, or even maybe, and I'll kill you where you sit. You say okay, and I'll let you keep going till you choke on one of your jokes.
You tell me if I'm right, and I'll give you a quick answer. You've been after Billy Crump ever since the shipyard's robbery because he got away with the money. You finally found his wife, and she got scared. She bought 2 tickets to Mexico. How am I doing?
Great. You tell a good story.
When Mrs. Crump saw all that lovely cabbage, she got greedy. She got a hold of you and made a deal.
Yeah, she was a pretty smart chicken. I knock off her husband, Billy, and she splits the dough with me.
And if I guess right, at 11 o'clock this morning, while you were killing Billy Crump, she was grabbing the $200,000.
So that's how it goes. But after we rubbed out Billy, she called and said the dough was planted with you.
She wanted the dough herself. She used me to lead you to the subway.
Right.
Where were you?
Upstairs. I figured something was up.
Well, nice little plot. You kill her husband, the cops kill you and your torpedo, and bless her little heart, she winds up with a pot of gold.
Now, she winds up dead. The dough wasn't in the box, so she planted it somewhere. We saw her coming in here after we worked you over. Now, I think she stashed the bundle here while you was out cold. So, do I get it, or do you die?
What are you going to do about that big, bad policeman outside the door?
I'm going to laugh at him because he ain't there.
Walt, stop snooping. Come on in.
Hey. Well, what do you know? You wasn't kidding.
This might mean a promotion, Purcell. You want to turn around and be a good boy, or do you want it the hard way?
I stay the way I am. You're in a tough spot, Mr. Copper. If this funny man's a friend of yours, he's going to get it the minute you try your luck.
Rick?
Yeah, Walt?
He's got a point. I might be lucky and get him just right, but it's a long shot, and if I miss, he'll pull the trigger on you.
You're pretty smart for a copper.
Walt?
Yeah?
The way it looks, we could be here all night unless somebody gets shot.
That's the way it looks.
What do you think, Purcell?
Like I said, the cop guns me, I gun you. Silly, ain't it?
Be a lot sillier if I had a gun.
Funny man, that would be a riot.
Well, start laughing, Powell.
You sure ruined that desk.
I couldn't help it. Had the gun between my knees. I move, he shoots. Had to try it right through the desk.
What are you sweating for?
Me? I could use you for a shower. How's Purcell?
Unhappy. How about it, Purcell?
I ain't giving odds. Hey, funny man, you know something? You ain't so funny.
Get the phone, Walt.
Yeah?
Lieutenant?
Oh, no. Yeah?
I found the box. The crump dame was in the bank at 11 o'clock this morning. I found it pretty quick, huh?
Hooray for you. Wait a minute. Rick, you were right about the... Hey, where did he go?
Who, Lieutenant?
King Kong. Now, you get your big fat head over here.
Lieutenant.
What is it?
Okay if I turn on the siren.
Oh...
Here's the iodine and bandages, Miss Helen.
Oh, thank you, Francis. Stop squirming, Rick.
Oh, honey, I know what's coming when I leave here. I'm going to look like an advertisement for a snappy funeral.
You baby. It's just a little iodine and bandages.
Oh, get her. You use enough iodine to stain an elephant, and so much bandage you could roll up a herd of mummies.
All right, then get infected.
I am infected.
Now, Rick, stop that.
Come here now. Come here. I've had a tough day. I've been beat up, shot at, and been insulted by Sergeant Otis. I need some relaxation. I want to play.
Should I leave, Miss?
You stay right where you are. I think there's a wolf loose.
Francis?
Yes, Mr. Diamond?
Have you studied your lessons on how to be a private detective?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm up to Chapter 8.
But have you read Chapter 8 yet?
Well, no, sir.
Oh, that's too bad. I was going to give you some first-hand advice on that chapter tonight.
Oh, I'll go read it right away, sir. Yeah. May I, Miss Helen?
Go ahead, Francis. I can't win.
Oh, this will be jolly.
No, come here, you.
But Rick, stop it.
Get away from that piano.
No. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make
come
me happy.
On,
you
would turn out great.
Well,
on.
You know what they say about music soothing a savage beast. Oh. If you don't like it, you sing something.
Oh, what for? You don't even look a little wild.
Sing something. I'll get as wild as you want.
Oh, now there's a statement.
Go on.
All right. Little girl, you're the one girl for me. Little girl, you're as sweet as can be. Just a glance at you meant love from the start. And oh, what a thrill came into my heart. Little girl, with your cute little ways, I am yours for the rest of my days. And this great big world will be divine. Little girl, when you're mine, all mine.
Okay, honey, now get wild.
All right. Come here.
Oh, a little wilder.
There you go.
Mr. Diamond, I'd like to ask your opinion. It says in Chapter 8 that homicide... Oh. Well, look at that. And I'm not blushing. Oh, I must be getting used to it.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg. Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Gene Bates, Robert Carroll, and Ted DeCorsia.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 24th, 1949 on NBC, from their first season that was part of NBC's Sunday night lineup at 5 o'clock. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now time for the adventures of Michael Shane, the new ones as they're billed. This syndicated broadcast from 1948 called The Case of the Bloodstained Pearls, with Jeff Chandler as star.
New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. And this is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode with Michael Shane, that reckless, red-headed Irishman, back in his old haunts in New Orleans. We call it The Case of the Bloodstained Pearl.
Okay, okay, I'm coming.
Open up, open up.
Next time, why not bring along an axe?
Close the door quickly. See quickly, man. Where's the key?
Key?
I want you to lock the door.
Now, look,
I
Papa.
I said I want you to lock the door, Mr. Shane.
Well, let's just snap the double lock for now, huh? And hope for the best. Hey, where are you going?
I want to look down the street. I'm sure they followed me. A crafty, scheming lot, I'll tell you that.
Hey, who are you talking about, Pop?
My friends, that's who. My dear, faithful friends. Faithful friends. They'd boil me in oil, skin me alive, cut me to ribbons to find out the hiding.
Hey, look, you better slow down. You're going to burn out a berry.
Scallions, scallywags, cutthroats, licks, fiddles.
And chicken inspectors. What are these friends of yours trying to find?
None of your business. You just keep that nose of yours out of my affairs.
Hey, remember, you came to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it just is all so infuriating. Makes my blood boil, swear it does. Three dear friends. For 6 years, we've shared the same little houseboat. Same skimpy fare. We've watched 2,000 sunsets.
Yeah.
We've talked 10,000 hours of the night awake. And now, Mr. Shane, what are your rates for guarding a man's life and possessions?
I kind of think I might be a little too rich for your blood, old-timer.
Oh, a little too rich for my blood.
Well,
you do indeed. Well, Mr. Shane.
Look,
I suppose you've come to that remarkable decision just by looking at me.
Now, just a coat,
these patched pants, the cardboard in my shoes. Too rich for my blood, huh? Let's shed a tear for me, poor old man Pete.
I didn't mean to hurt your feelings,
Feelings? Why the feelings? I come here on business. My life's in peril, my possessions in jeopardy. Despite your outrageous rates, I'll pay out of my meager savings.
And just what are these possessions you want me to protect?
Wait.
Hey, leave those window shades alone. It's dark enough as it is in here.
Stop with nothing. Absolutely nothing. And now, Mr. Shane, now this is what I want you to protect.
Yeah?
The contents of this little leather bag.
What?
Yes, here's what this pitiful old man wants you to protect. Mr. Shane, yes. This is what they killed me for. In the palm of my hand, I hold three pearls worth $1 million.
It had started like any other day. A widow named Mrs. Karpolis had hired me to track down one of her boarders who'd run away with her copper samovar. And I fear the good widow's heart. A guy had called to ask my rates for getting divorce evidence against his blonde wife. And then an old man named Peters came in. The kind of old guy you might see in Jackson Square, sleeping on the grass with a newspaper over his face. Only this old man had $1 million worth of the biggest pearls I'd ever seen in my whole life.
Well, how do you like them, Mr. Shane?
Well, you could use them for snowballs, Mr. Mm-hmm. Peters. Where'd you get them?
I found them 3 weeks ago in a little cove along the Mississippi. Not so many years ago, this part of the river was one of the favorite haunts of pirates, like Lafitte. This might have been part of his treasure, lost in the sea, washed up by the tides.
Yeah.
Give them back to me. Give them here. You've held them long enough.
Yeah, they're all yours, Pop. Hey, did you ever have them appraised by a jeweler?
I wouldn't trust them out of my sight. Even my own friends would kill me for them.
Well, how do you know they're worth $1 million?
I've gone to the library, looked up pearls in all encyclopedias. I've compared them with the descriptions of the very finest. There is no comparison. Mine are the most beautiful pearls of them all, and they'd take them from me. Imagine that, my own friends.
Now, if you were smart, you'd sell them to a good jeweler and forget them.
Never. I'll never sell them. What could anyone give me half so beautiful as these pearls themselves?
Yeah, I bet you $1 million all stacked up real neat is kind of beautiful. Besides, looking in an encyclopedia, what's that?
Hmm?
For all you know, these pearls came out of a popcorn box, and you're all upset about nothing.
Oh, you think so? You think so, eh? Nothing. Well, all right, let's go to a jeweler. I saw one down the street.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Forrester.
Mind you, I won't sell them, no matter what the price. But let him look at them, Mr. Shane. Let him tell you what they're worth.
Well, Mr. Forrester?
Well?
Go on, tell us, Mr. Shane, what they're worth. He thinks they might have come out of a popcorn box. Tell him, go on, tell him.
I've never seen anything like them.
Mm-hmm.
They're priceless.
Ah, you hear, Mr. Shane? You hear? Now, give them back to me. Give me here.
Yes, of course.
My beautiful little ladies. Now, Mr. Shane knows your worth, yes? Now, he won't walk you in.
Well, what would you say they were worth, Mr. Forrester?
Well, I wouldn't even try to give you an estimate, Mr. Shane.
Thanks, Mr. Forrester. Come on, Pop. Back to my office. Okay, Pop, have a seat.
Now you'll take me seriously, Mr. Shane.
These people who you think are trying to take the pearls from you...
I know. They kill me for it.
Yeah, all right. You say you live with them on a houseboat, huh?
Yeah, off Pier 22 on River Highway.
And did you tell them about the pearls?
No, of course not, but I know they're spying on me continually.
No, wait. Excuse me.
All right.
Yeah?
Mr. Shane, this is Forrester, the jeweler.
Yeah?
I thought I'd better call you as soon as you got back to your office.
Why?
Is the old man still with you?
Yeah.
Then don't let Unwoods talking to you.
What's that?
I didn't want to break his heart. I could see what the pearls meant to him, and as long as he never tries to sell them, well, why should we hurt him?
You mean...
They're paste, Mr. Shane. Nothing but paste. At the very most, they are worth $5.
Well, how do you like that?
Shane, I wish you'd hurry. I don't have all day.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks for calling. Goodbye.
Now, Mr. Shane, now we can talk business.
I've already gotten a business. But go on, Mr. Peters. So old man Peters hired me to protect his $5 worth of imitation pearls. I overcame the real Shane long enough to tell him he could pay me at the end of the month, by which time I was sure he'd be out of my hair. He left the office and I forgot about him. Then one night he caught me in one of my less happy moods. The office rent was 2 weeks overdue. 3 of my checks had bounced. I was stretched out on my couch feeling jollier than words can say, and the phone started ringing. Yeah.
It's me again, Peters.
Look, Peters, I wish you'd stop calling me.
What kind of a detective are you anyhow? I'm threatened for the day and night, and you wish I'd stop calling.
Oh, what is it now?
I know who's been following me. I saw today for the first time.
Look, this is not good. It's bad for you and it's bad for me. You come up to my office. I'm going to break it to you, gently.
Break what to me?
You just come on up, Pop.
Don't you want to hear who's following me?
You'll tell me when you get here. We'll trade little secrets. Okay, Pop, okay. Do you always have to knock like that? Look, if you break the glass, you're going to have to hock all your pearls to pay for it. Come on in.
Shane.
Hey, Pop, what's wrong? Old man Peters was dead before he hit the floor. I don't know how he ever lived to reach my office. There were 4 bullet holes in his back. As he fell, his left arm flung out wildly. His left fingers doubled into a fist. I bent down to see what was in that fist. It was his most priceless possession, a bag of phony pearls. Before calling the cops, I put the pearls in my pocket because now I was going to make it my business to find out who'd killed the old man. After the cops finished questioning me, I really felt beat. I went home to my hotel room and arranged my weary bones around the lumps in the mattress and drifted off to sleep. Then I had to drift right back again. Yeah. Hello.
Mr. Shane, this is Mr. Tompkins.
Yeah, Tompkins.
Hey, watch me down at the office building.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I'd better call you.
Well, what happened?
Somebody broke into your office a while ago.
Huh? When was this?
Well, it must have been between my rounds. I heard something. I came and looked. Everything sure was torn to pieces.
Fine.
I hope they didn't get anything of value, Mr. Shane.
No. No, that's what makes it so wonderful to be poor. Good night. I hung up and started going back to sleep. Just before I made it, I suddenly started thinking about the little bag of phony pearls that was right now in the rear pocket of the pants hanging over my dresser. All of a sudden, I wasn't nearly as sleepy as I thought. I reached for my cigarettes under my pillow, and then I heard the tiniest sound. Someone was trying to fit a key into my door. The tiny grating sound continued. A couple seconds more and the door would open. I started for my gun on the dresser. I heard the lock snap back. I ran for the dresser. Doc, I stumbled over a chair. I heard a quick move in the hall. I grabbed the gun and raced to the door. All was empty. Nothing but closed doors with numbers on it. The only sound was a guy in one of the rooms whimpering in his sleep. A nice, peaceful scene. 5 seconds ago, I'd been close enough to death to smell it. Who had it been? Who had old man Peters been afraid of? That was an easy one. His three pals on a houseboat. I remember how I'd laughed to myself when he told me they'd kill him for the pearls. Funny thing, I wasn't laughing anymore. I had the pearls now. The next morning, when I went down to my battered old office, I found a telegram among the ruins. Would like to see you this evening regarding the death of our friend George Peters. And there was an address. It was dark by the time we got there. The cab had worn out 3 maps and his smiling disposition. 5 miles out of town, right in the middle of nothing. A rotting wooden pier sticking into the water maybe 20 feet. And at the end of it, a battered old tug.
That'll be $2.75.
Okay, here you are. I'm sure sorry I dragged you out this far.
Ain't half so sorry as I am, friend.
Oh, wait for me, will you? I'll be right back.
Drop dead.
Hey, wait. Hey. Rain. In the darkness, the lights of New Orleans seemed 1,000 miles away. I started down the wooden pier. There were lights somewhere on the tug. There didn't seem to be anything living around here, except the mosquitoes. I hopped onto the tug and started looking for somebody. I heard someone singing. I followed the sound. Found a stairway leading down into the hold of the ship. The old guys were sitting on orange crates near a big pot-bellied coal stove. The one who was singing looked like Moses must have looked, complete with a flaming red beard.
Thank you, Brown. Just hearing it makes me feel a little better.
Who are you?
What do you want?
I'm Michael Shane.
Shane.
Brown? Well, Mr. Brown was just singing poor Mr. Peters' favorite song. Old George never got tired of hearing it. What can we do for you, Mr. Shane?
I got a wire asking me to come down here.
I sent the wire, Mr. Shane.
Where'd you come?
My niece, Mr. Shane.
Why'd you send for him, Eve?
To hear his side of it.
His side of it.
Peters died in your office, according to the papers, Mr. Shane.
Well, that's right, Eve.
Papers also say they can't seem to find a motive for the crime. He wasn't robbed. Say they found his wallet and his wallet.
That's all they found.
Oh, is there something else to find, Mr. Bryant?
Eve, you see?
Yeah.
I think you better go, Mr. Shane.
Yeah, but I've got some questions to ask, too. Last night, somebody...
Long, long trail of...
Hey, will you tell this guy to shut up?
Get out, Mr. Shane. Get out of my sight.
I can take a hint as well as the next guy. Besides, there was something in old Brown's eyes when he turned on me. Or maybe it was the crazy red beard. Anyhow, all of a sudden, I wanted to be in the open air again. With the cab gone, there was nothing between me and New Orleans but a long, long trail of winding, like the man said. I started hiking down the road. Must have walked 2 miles before I came to the gas station. It was all locked up for the night, but there was a phone booth outside. I called for a cab. And then as I hung up, I'd have sworn somebody was standing right behind me. I started to turn.
I tried to duck. I heard a ripping sound, a knife. I tried to grab the arm. Instead, my fingers closed around the blade. I felt the blade cutting into the flesh. There wasn't any pain, just a warm wetness. I couldn't reach the knife. I found his wrist with my teeth. I bit down hard. The knife hit the ground. Then I grabbed for the guy. My fingers closed around a handful of hair. He tore himself free, running off down the road.
I just flopped down on the ground. After a while, I lit my cigarette lighter to take inventory of the wreckage. There was some mess. One hand looked like second-quality hamburger. The other hand was okay. It still held a fistful of hair. Red hair. Yeah, I'd just given Mr. Brown's beard a trim. The hard way. The cab showed up about an hour later. Instead of going to the city, I headed back to Pier 22. I was just groggy enough and mad enough to want the rest of that red beard. I marched down the gangway again. This time, there was only Eve putting a coffee pot on the stove. She heard me and she turned.
What? Mr.
Michael Shane.
Where is he? I'm going to kill him. Where is he?
You're hurt. Look at you.
Well, never mind that. Just tell me where I can get my hands on that bearded old goat.
You've got to let me help you now. Here, sit down, please.
Yeah, maybe I better. Only for a minute, though.
Let me get your coat off, man. Good heavens, Mr. Shane, just look at you.
Yeah, nice old man you are, Mr. Brown. Hey, easy with the coat. Oh. Take the arm right with you.
Mr. Brown didn't.
Yeah, he sure did. I've got half his red beard to prove it.
I was afraid something like this was going to happen. I don't know what to say.
You better say with mercurochrome and bandages. Yeah, I didn't think it was this bad myself.
There. I think that'll hold you till you can get to a doctor.
Regular Florence Nightingale, aren't you, Eve? I mean, I bet you Florence never wore blue jeans and a green sweater.
You still look pretty weak, Mr. Shane. I'll get you a cup of coffee.
Yeah, good idea. Of course, I like my mama's way better.
Huh?
When I got hurt, she used to kiss it better.
I'll get the coffee.
I was talking about mama.
How much sugar?
You really got a one-track mind, Eve. Two lumps. Well, as long as you don't want to discuss mama, let's get back to old man Brown. Where is he now?
I don't know. I haven't seen him since you left. Here's your coffee.
Thanks. That's good heart. You know, I'm glad you're not in on this.
In on what?
This whole business. Peters, Pearls, Brown.
I don't understand.
Oh, of course you don't understand. It takes a particular kind of woman to understand. Now, I've been in this racket so long, I can spot a wrong dame like that.
But you don't understand people like Mr. Brown.
What's there to understand?
You know what he was? Milkman in Chicago.
Yeah, she stayed there.
That's a dull, monotonous job. Year after year. And the pension also could crawl into a corner and die.
Yeah,
my uncle and poor Mr. Peters. They were like that, too. Wasting their life, precious years. But always dreaming of escape.
Look, I don't feel
so
good.
Can't imagine how happy these three old men were. Can't imagine how fond they became of each other. Something wrong, Mr. Shane?
Sick. Stomach, what?
Your faith in me was a little premature, Mr. Shane. I poisoned your coffee.
I started through the gangway, and then the gangway subdivided like something under a microscope, and there were two gangways. And then there were four, and then there were gangways everywhere. I tried climbing all the stairs, and then barring my way was Eve's uncle, Mr. Johnson, only it was a whole row of Mr. Johnsons, and they were all holding ancient guns. I remember rushing through the cold air. I remember falling to my knees just as I heard all the ancient guns go off. Last thing I saw in all the world were the headlights of the taxicab I'd told to wait. My last thought was how funny. Most taxicabs had only two headlights, but this one had half a million.
Looks like he's coming out of a dock.
Yes, he's a lucky boy.
Shane, you must have cornered the market on four-leaf clovers. You had enough poison in you to...
Take it easy, Mr. Shane. You're going to be all right.
Hey, who's this Eve?
Eve? Eve, double-crossing dame.
Oh, the cab driver who brought you here gave us the address.
Since I'm the guy they ran through the meat grinder, will you let me finish it off my way?
Well, what do you mean, Shane?
On the way out to the houseboat, I want to pick up a jeweler named Forrester. So we picked up Forrester. The poor guy was so scared to hear us pounding on his door at 2 a.m, I thought he'd never live to make the houseboat. It was almost 3 when we got there. But Eve and Brown and Johnson were still up, sitting around the red-hot coal stove like they'd been expecting us right along. Eve jumped up as we clattered down the gangway.
Mr. Shane, Mike, you're all right.
Yeah, that coffee, it was better than tonic. You ought to bottle it, Eve. You really have something there. Okay, Inspector, take over.
I'm arresting all three of you. A charge of murder.
Murder?
Before you take him away, I want to show him this. Yeah, kiddies, here's a bag of pearls. I had them on me all the time.
Mike.
Yeah, here's what you killed old man Peters
for. No, Mike.
Shut up.
You and all that corny talk about friendship. The three old buddies sitting in the sun. Yeah, blood brothers until one of them found a bag of pearls. Then it was his blood.
Don't you say that.
Oh, I'm not through, baby. I'm just full of surprises. Mr. Forrester, tell him what these pearls are really worth.
Five a piece. They're not worth $5.
You hear that? That's what you shot the old man in the back for, a bag of phonies. And here's where the phonies are going, right where poor old Peter should have thrown them in the first place. Right into the stove. Right into the fire.
Don't be so mean.
Hey, Forrester, what's wrong?
The fire will destroy them. You stupid fool, I've got to save them.
Hey, get away from here.
No. Save them. Get
out, you bird.
$1,000,000.
Someone
finally pulled Forrester's arm out of the car. While we waited for an ambulance, Forrester blubbered out the whole story. How he'd killed Peters for the pearls. How he'd come into the hallway of my hotel that night and would have killed me for them. How he'd have killed 1,000 times for such wonders as those priceless jewels. Now I'd destroyed them. I didn't hear much of it. I just flopped down, let my head fall on my chest. All that had happened was finally catching up with me. Then as the inspector started up the gangway, I waved for him to come over.
What is it, Shane?
Here, Inspector. Give these to the museum or something.
The pearls? I don't understand.
Well, the way Forrester acted when we picked him up tonight got me to wondering. I thought, why take a chance? So all I threw into the fire was a cloth bag.
Shane, you know there are times when I almost wish you'd joined the force.
Yeah. With all my other troubles, that's all I'd need.
Okay, kid. See you around, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mike?
Hmm?
Feeling better?
Yeah. I feel beautiful.
You thought we killed Mr. Peters for the pearls.
Hmm.
We thought you killed him for him. We love the old man so much, that's why we tried to kill you.
You know, Eve, you can be arrested for that if I want to press charges, that is.
You want to?
Oh.
At least it wasn't all wasted. At least I met you, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah, big deal. Well, I'd better be going. I'm pretty beat.
Must you go, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Cold air. It's time morning. Cut right through you.
And if I stay, what would you do to keep me warm?
I'll make you a nice pot of coffee.
Yeah. Good night, kid.
This is your director, Bill Russo. Michael Shane is written by Larry Marcus and based on characters created by Brett Halliday. Music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chandler. Next week, Mike Shane, against his will, gets involved in an exciting story of romance and intrigue. I hope you'll be listening.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from 1948 released by Broadcasters Guild Syndication. And our cases are closed in this hour of detective mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. It's been a pleasure.